Welcome back to another episode of the Jewish Moves Podcast. This week's episode is with Hanala. She's a singer with 8 albums, DVDs, and other songs, as well as the host of the Weekly Squeeze Podcast. Hanala, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I am good. Good to be here. I think you need to say my name and then stop. Hanala, so it sinks in because people are like, who? What? Who's on the show?
Hanala. Is that a good pause?
Perfect.
Okay. How did you first start singing, I guess, for more than just casually?
Well, you know, there was never an official switch from being Hanala, the girl who was always singing, to being Hanala, the girl who was also now paid to sing. I think what made me recognize the career I had ahead of me was when Izzy from Sameach Music called me up and said, hey, I hear people are sharing your CDs that you're burning in your apartment all over the place. So let me print it for you professionally and we'll put a Sameach music barcode and we'll put it in the stores and not just one, we'll do two. So go record something else. So that really shifted my amateur music interest and passion to a, hey, I have something that's, you know, that's going over here.
Wow. And I think I heard that in the beginning when you had to record the second album, your roommates got annoyed because you were doing it in the apartment. What other challenges did you have getting started out?
Oof. What challenges did I not have getting starting out as a from female Lubavitch singer and songwriter that had a very small audience? A great audience, but a very limiting audience. I mean, it's no secret that Kol Isha is at once a barrier and sometimes, you know, a cross to bear. So that's something, it's not every mitzvah is as easy as the next one. And that's what's a beautiful thing about Yiddishkeit, because we work on ourselves to do the bigger mitzvahs. So, you know, Kol Isha defines my career and so many challenges along the way because of that. However, I've been tremendously successful. So, remind me the trajectory of the question.
The challenges you had, were there, I guess, more, were there challenges pertinent to that specific starting album or two?
Listen, life is full of challenges. So of course there were challenges. There was, you know, I had the same challenges that other people did. There was no social media. So we used to go on forums online to figure out how to use our gear. You know, it was much harder to get music. I remember when an MP3 took 4 hours to email, one MP3. I remember burning my original music on a zip drive. Does anyone even know what a zip drive is? Like on a small multi-track recorder and bouncing 8 tracks to 16 tracks. And then wow. I did a lot of harmonies and panning everything. And it took hours and there was no computer screen and everything was with a, you know, you had this little digital circle that you would turn to get to the right second and you'd be writing notes. And then you had to bounce out your mix and burn it onto a standalone CD burner. And then you had to repeat that process a bunch of times if you wanted to share your music. So there were so many challenges. I taught myself how to play piano. I had to pay for my gear. I everything was out of pocket, obviously. And you know, there was this constant struggle to make a normal living out of it because people assume if the audience is smaller, the paycheck is smaller and religion shouldn't be, shouldn't encumber me in that way. It didn't feel like bracha. Like if what I was doing had bracha, singing for women only, why shouldn't it be have bracha that I'm very successful?
Wow. And when you entered in the beginning, did you have a plan to overcome these challenges? I know you've spoken in the past on your own podcast and on other podcasts about the challenge of a smaller audience and the less exposure you get. Did you enter with a game plan as to how to take over create this world? Or was it kind of just like, I'm going to try to put out the best music and hope it naturally grows?
You know, I always go back to my Lubavitch roots, because I really was instilled from a very young age and taught by the Rebbe that a person can do anything if they're doing it for the right reasons. And I didn't think of the challenges. I just thought, listen, I love recording. I love being able to record my own harmonies. I love harmonies. I love music. And I could play and I could sing and I could do what I love and I could share it. And people really enjoy it. And nobody's actually making the effort, at least back then, nobody was making the effort to self-produce. I was self-producing. I self-produced all my albums, every last one of them until today. And sure, some of them are, you know, not as fantastic as they could be because every album brings a whole team of people and all their talent. So I'm a one-man show for the most part. I've learned how to outsource, but the point
is... You didn't even go to music school, right? I heard you didn't go to music school.
How many guys do you know that went to music school? Ira Fried, I promise you, didn't go to music school.
Benny Freeman, when he came on, he said he had a vocal coach. But other than that, I don't know.
Listen, every album and every artist invests in themselves in different ways. So I never officially took music lessons, but I have spent 1,000 hours on my craft, learning how to be an engineer, learning how to record and mix, learning how to, you know, professionally, I do other people's projects too. Learning how to write songs when people hire me, like, hey, we need a song and we need it by Wednesday and it needs to be great. And I'm like, okay. And I'm going to send it to you as a great demo that you could enjoy. You know, learning how to complete projects from A to Z, make a video, create the concept, make the music, record it, mix it, and then send it off and have the customer be happy and then put it out into the world and do that over and over and over. So, you know, it's just something that I take very seriously. And I never thought about the challenges. I just thought about how much I love it and how much I want to, you know, and how it's who I am. And this is my life.
Very nice. Other than, I guess, the personal joy, is there something else that motivates you to, I guess, more in the beginning to really try to make it happen?
Women motivate me. The women and girls who have reached out to me and continue to reach out to me and tell me over and over again, I love your music. I love your songs. Your music speaks to me. We love the Bella Bracha videos. We love Parsha Time. We love Nimi and Simi. Whatever you work on, we love. Every time we come across a project that you're involved in, it's just you speak to our hearts and people really connect with what I create. So, you know, as an artist, what else could I ask for?
And I was curious, you know, you mentioned some of the productions you've just done that people are complimenting you on. Do you have a favorite production, whether it be the preschool graduation music you used to do or one of your more widely circulated albums?
Well, the preschool music I've done is certainly not. I mean, it's a feather in my cap, but those were just small projects where I was able to flex my songwriting muscles. But in general, I know everybody says this, but I really put my heart and soul into what I'm working on. So usually if I'm happy with it, it's good stuff. So I don't look at different projects like, oh, that wasn't as good as this one. Everything I've worked on, I've put my best efforts and my best foot forward, and there's a lot of good stuff. Obviously some material is closer to my heart. If I write a song that, you know, something personal, or I'm going through something, or, you know, if the audience appreciates it a lot, that also makes it more exciting. So even Bella Bracha song, I'm going to a wedding, that everybody seems to know from a children's DVD. I'm like, great. That was a great song. Everybody knows it and loves it. So that's it.
Very nice. And do you have a favorite performance or concert you did?
I love to perform, and I've had some very interesting experiences over the years. I've traveled a ton. And I've sung for every type of audience. I've sung in China, and I sang in South America, where everybody spoke only Spanish, and in Hawaii, and in Australia, and in Barranquilla, and Bogota, and Alaska, and just everywhere. And every audience was different, and every experience was different. I actually made an entire course on show business, which is a course that I sell and people buy, where I share all those experiences I had over the years trying to figure out how to make this career work and how to get it off the ground. So, you know, I embrace it all with love. Every experience has been positive. Obviously, some are easier and better paying than others, but I've been very blessed, and I look at each opportunity to sing as unique and special in and of itself.
Very nice. And I guess you've touched upon it in this interview, and I've seen it in articles about you or other things you've written, but you're definitely trying to, I guess, pay the path for other women as well, or give them inspiration. And I know that at one point you, even though I didn't listen to it, I saw you had a double album with one album of your songs and one album of other people's songs. How exactly are you hoping to bring more people into this? And you mentioned already the challenges of being a woman in Jewish music. Do you think there's space for so many more musicians to keep the, I guess, market sustainable?
Okay. I'll answer the second question first. Yes, there is room for more women and girls to keep singing. The question is, what is the market? Okay. And what people can anticipate when getting into show business, the Jewish show business, realistically, what's available out there, what your expectations can be. And as far as other women go, listen, I know everyone knows that I promote other women, whether it's on my Instagram, whether it's on an album that I did years ago where I emailed, this was before social media, I emailed everyone. If you want to send in a recording, this is your chance. Sameach Music's going to put it out. I'm going to cover the cost for a double album. We're going to have a bunch of your songs and a bunch of my songs. And you know what? Some of those girls, their voices have never been heard since. So for them, it was a really special thing. Now, I know that, you know, people wonder about the Jewish music business, about the women in it, and what the relationships are over there. I think people are interested. And I'll say like this. When you really support other Jewish women, you don't hurt them accidentally. And I can say proudly that I have never disregarded someone who was interested in music or had a passion for music or was creating music. I've only been there to support and to share and to cheer the women on. And everyone knows this. And anyone who ever has anything else to say about that simply has to examine, you know, their intentions. I know my intentions. My intentions are, and I always say this, a rising tide raises all ships. If Jewish women are doing what they love to do in a kosher tznius way, and girls and women have the opportunity to use their voices to as an expressive outlet, something that is so important, something that is such a useful tool for Jewish women to just, you know, inspire themselves. It's like so important. Jewish music is just so crucial. Then I'm thrilled to help make that happen. I want that to happen. It's only positive. Nothing negative is going to come out of it. And just to wrap it up, there is no real Jewish music market. If your music's good and you promote yourself and people start sharing it, you'll make some money on Spotify. That's as great as it gets for your average from Jewish singer these days. If you want to make a lot of money like me, do everything. Write music, arrange music, compose music, make a podcast, play guitar, perform, arrange your own songs. You know, I'm all in it. So you gotta hustle.
Very
Look,
nice.
I even have a beer bottle with my name on it.
Wow. Is that a wine people could buy, or it's just a one-off?
Maybe one day. No. Someone once gave this to me.
Okay, very nice. And I guess you mentioned the producing it and arranging it and everything else. So before we talk about the podcast, I'll just ask one more question about music. I see you're sitting in your studio. How did you, I guess, come to the ability to really build a real studio in your house with all the guitars and everything else and the padding on the wall? And what has that been like?
Well, I married a great guy and he pays for everything.
That's nice.
No, I'm saying that you have to have a spouse who's supportive, and I do have a very supportive spouse every step of the way. So I give him a lot of credit for what I've been able to accomplish. Next is, listen, if I was a lawyer or I was a doctor, or if I was a physical therapist, I'd have an office with my materials that I need to do my job. So I have an office where I have the materials I need to do my job. And yes, it's guitars and it's a bunch and a bass, and I have mixers and speakers and keyboards and books and music and painting and art and inspiration and microphones and everything. Because this is where I work. This is where I create. This is where I write. This is where I produce. This is where I share. And, you know, I want to, what I create deserves the right setting so that it's presented to the world professionally.
Very nice. Do other people use it also, or it's a personal thing?
What do you mean? Use my studio?
Yeah.
No, my studio is my personal space. I have people in my studio, but it's not like you could rent it by the hour. This is my home office. Let's put it that way.
Very nice. And I guess we'll transition. I mentioned in the introduction, you have a podcast called The Weekly Squeeze, where you talk about popular trends in a society or and your thoughts on them. I guess in a very general sense, how do you think of starting that podcast?
Well, clearly, I feel like there was a certain, I don't know how to describe it in podcast language. There was a niche that had yet to be tapped. I felt like there were no light podcasts that you could listen to and have a laugh that weren't about like self-help and growth and marriage and growth and marriage and self-help. Like at some point, you know, you want to just be able to play a podcast while your kids are cutting up a salad for dinner and everyone has a laugh and you catch up on world events and I get to share my thoughts and opinions on things. And, you know, I'm in the know. My head is in that space. So I live in Israel. I can share what's on the ground here. I have a lot of connections in my life and I, you know, I have what to talk about. So it just seemed like the perfect combination. And you know what? It's in the top 20 Jewish podcasts in the nation regularly. So that's good.
Very nice. And I guess I'll follow up on that. You mentioned that you're in the know and you get to share your thoughts on the events. Some singers I've spoken to either before the podcast started or even during it, I have mentioned that, you know, they don't like to get involved in personal political thoughts or thoughts on trends in Jewish culture or society at large. Because, you know, as you mentioned, the Jewish market's not a worldwide, a multi-billion person thing. And if you could bother people, then you're just trimming your already small audience. So is that something you consider, the risk that perhaps you're turning away part of your current audience?
Listen, that's a risk I have to take because as it is, my audience is small. Now, Kol Isha doesn't apply to a woman's speaking voice. So I can share whatever I like and have a much larger audience. So could I lose some of my, you know, my core audience, my core fans? It's risky, and maybe some people don't like my opinions and would just rather me, like they, you know, like they say, shut up and sing. But you don't have to listen, number one. Number two, I truly believe that I am very clear on who I am and what my values are at this stage of the game, and they're completely consistent with everything I've been singing for the last 20 years. So anyone who has been listening to my music, any of it in any form, knows what my hashkafas are, knows my, you know, my Torah values, and anyone who looks into my life, even for a minute, knows that I lead a respectable from life, and I have yichus. So, you know.
Very nice. Wow. So I guess the podcast is more of a continuation. And you mentioned that you're on social media a lot, and we know you have the music and the podcast. Is there a next step in terms of an expansion of the Chanua brand?
I've always wanted to write a book, but I'm not going to be writing a book. For two reasons. Number one, because if I ever write a book that's true, like 100% true, it'll be so scandalous, I will kill my career. The things that I've discovered along the way. So it's better if that book remains unwritten. And then ultimately, I think at this point, my growth is going to be in my opinions and my thoughts and my insights as a podcast host, and I have been presented a very, very big opportunity that I can't speak about it yet, but if everything falls into place, I'll be taking this whole thing into the next level, the stratosphere, let's say. So, you know, Baruch Hashem, I recognize that speaking on behalf of Jewish women is a responsibility, and I take that seriously, and I speak on behalf of Eretz Yisrael very often. I speak on behalf of the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Lubavitch. And I speak on, you know, behalf of a Jewish woman, an Orthodox from Jewish woman. And these are the opinions that the world is hearing. So I take that seriously. And I never say things that are just hefker. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sounds really good. And hopefully this opportunity that's unnamed works out well. I guess we'll wrap up with two more questions. One of them is, you mentioned that you appreciate the positive feedback you get and the joy that you spread. Is there a favorite message you ever got from somebody regarding your music or podcast?
Oof. there's so many, and not to sound braggadocious, but there are so many that I couldn't narrow it down to one. But I will say that it constantly, number one, just amazes me that people have the me dice to sit down and type how they feel when something moves them. Just wow. Yeah. Amazing. Mi kam Yisrael. And B, there really is no B. I'm humbled and I appreciate it. And I get back to everybody and I'm very easy to reach and accessible. And I've always been, I have my boundaries, obviously personal boundaries. But the fact of the matter is, my life has been very much a blessing, and everything that's involved in my music career is also a blessing. So all of it has been, Baruch Hashem, very positive.
Well, that's really good. And I guess we'll go to the last question, which is every episode ends with the same question, which is, I know you've been interviewed on a ton of podcasts before. I saw when I looked you up, you had your name had a lot of hits in both the album section on Spotify and the podcast section as a guest and as a host. And you've had articles about you in Jewish magazines. But even though you've been asked so many questions, there's always questions people have not been asked that they wish they were. So looking back at all the questions you have been asked, what's a question you've never been asked that you wished you were? And what answer would you give to them?
I love that. That is, I think that's the question. But all right, I'll give you something else. I think, that's a really good question. You know what? I'm pretty transparent. I don't think there's anything I've really wanted to tell the world that I haven't had the opportunity to. But what I would like people to ask me is, if things were different and you could sing for the whole world, would you?
That's interesting.
And the answer would probably be no. Because I am so content singing for women, about women, that if things were different and like Kolisha wasn't a thing, it would lose its entire specialness. And, you know, so, yeah, that's the question.
Very
and that's
nice.
The answer.
Yeah, good question, I guess, and good answer. Before we end, do you want to say how people could find you on social media or the podcast or the music?
Sure. I'm on Instagram at Chanala Music. My podcast is The Weekly Squeeze. And yeah, you can Google me.
Okay, everybody.
And Spotify. Spotify is also always good.
Okay, I'll put links in the podcast description. Thank you again for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this past episode of the Jewish Schmooze podcast. To get our latest updates and contact us, you can follow us on Twitter at Jews_Schmooze. If you want to sponsor an upcoming episode, you can reach out to JewsSchmoozeMarketing@gmail.com. And if you give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening on, that'll be tremendously appreciated. Thank you so much, and hope you're looking forward to the next episode also.